Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 17, The Forsaken, teleplayed by Don Carlos Dunaway and Michael Piller, and directed by Les Landau. This episode aired on May 23rd, 1993.
This week on Deep Space Nine, an alien computer program wreaks havoc with the station's systems during a visit from Loxana Troi and other ambassadors.
So today we have special guest Tessa Suela of the Monkey Off My Backlog podcast. Welcome, Tessa.
Thanks for having me.
While you're here, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Star Trek and Deep Space Nine?
Oh, such a loaded question. I have been...
It often is.
Tell me about yourself and a major building block of your childhood. So I have been watching Star Trek since before I could remember names of people on television shows. My parents, well, my dad really, is a huge Trekkie, loves Star Trek, but especially Next Generation. That was like a huge thing when I was a kid. I remember, I didn't even understand the concept of what an alien was, because I remember asking my dad why Worf was so angry all the time, because I thought that he was frowning. I thought that's what the things were on his head. And I didn't remember the names. I just called Picard the captain. Like, that was sort of my introduction to Star Trek. But I also remember seeing episodes of Voyager when I was very young. I don't really think that I systematically started watching Star Trek until I was a teenager, mainly because of the advent of Netflix, and they would send you those discs, remember? And yep. My dad took that as an opportunity to, like, watch a lot of Star Trek. And so we watched, you know, all of Deep Space Nine, all of Voyager, all of Next Generation, all of TOS when I was a teenager. So, yeah, it's been a really formative part of my childhood and my introduction to science fiction and my introduction to, you know, a lot of these actors. You know, I follow them no matter what they do because I just love them so much. So yeah, Deep Space Nine, I want to say that I did watch that probably I was like 13 or 14. It was definitely after I'd watched most of The Next Generation, because I was already very aware of, like, the Locutus of Borg storyline and, you know, the conversation that Sisko and Picard have at the very beginning of the series. So that would probably be my relationship with DS9. I know that we didn't watch it as much as some of the other ones, so it's been a long time since I've gone back and watched some of these episodes.
Which series is your favorite?
Oh, that's really hard.
You don't have to have one. I was just curious.
When I was a kid, I loved Voyager, and it was mainly because I really loved Janeway and I really loved Seven of Nine. And those are two characters that I'm just always going to just love completely. But I have to say TOS, though, has its charm. We've been rewatching it recently, and I'll probably talk about that a little bit on this episode, and it stands up.
That's great. I love it. Yeah, I'm still watching TOS. I have most of season 3 left. And I'm also watching Voyager now, which I watched Tuvix today, and I'm traumatized. So
the moral dilemma of Tuvix.
Oh, God. Yeah, I have a lot of opinions, but for another time.
I was going to say, I don't. Do we want to get into Tuvix discourse? Because maybe we won't have time to talk about The Forsaken if we get into Tuvix discourse. I don't know.
Instead of talking about The Forsaken, we're just going to have an episode called Tuvix, and people are going to be like, I didn't think that was DS9.
I'll make one comment. In Avengers Endgame, when Tessa Thompson said to the Smart Hulk, I think I liked you better either of the other ways, I think she was really talking to Tuvix in that moment.
Interesting. Yeah. Hot take.
That is my hot take.
All right. So season 1, episode 17, The Forsaken. yeah, I guess we'll start with you, Elise. What were some of your initial thoughts on this episode? Did you like it? Did you not like it? How are we feeling about The Forsaken?
I definitely liked all the character stuff in this episode with Odo and Luxana. I thought that having Majel Barrett appear in an episode where there was something wrong with the computer system was entirely meta and funny because, as we know, she does the voice of all the Starfleet computers. So that was really funny. I looked up I forget what the actor's name is that voiced the, like, Cardassian computer in this episode, but obviously it wasn't her. But yeah, I feel like we learned a lot about Odo, which I liked.
Tessa, what about you?
So I have a lot of feelings about this episode. I am a Luxana stan, and so we're going to be talking about her a lot, I feel like. But this episode for me is really, and I don't want to get too far into this because I'm sure we'll talk about it in, like, the specifics of the episode. But for me, this episode is really a Justice for Luxana episode. Like, there's a lot, she's kind of the butt of a joke in Next Generation. And even though she's, like, a great character and she definitely breaks out of that in a lot of ways, she's really just meant to be funny. And for me, this episode does a lot of work to interrogate that and to add a little bit more depth to her as a character, to give her her own motivations for things. And so that's kind of my initial thoughts about this episode, is that I liked what they were trying to do with that.
I feel that. I do agree that she was often brought on as like the butt of a joke in TNG. I never saw her that way, even though she, like, at times would frustrate me, but I feel like I just love her empathy. I'll get into it a little bit more later, but she's just, I like her a lot.
And what's kind of, like, interesting, and I mean, not to jump ahead too much, but that idea of, like, adding kind of additional pathos and, like, kind of, you know, that whole, like, more dimensions to the elements and portrayal of Luxana. DS9 and, like, this episode kind of definitely started it first, because I know a lot of people would point to the Next Generation episode Dark Page, which is season 7 episode 7. That's the one where there's the young Kirsten Dunst, and we find out about the child that Luxana lost, who, spoiler for Picard, that's who Troy and Riker's daughter is named after, is that child. It's Kestra. But again, kind of continuing that trend. But yeah, it started on Deep Space Nine, which I think is really interesting.
Baby Kirsten Dunst. I remember doing, like, Leonardo DiCaprio, like, pointing when I saw that episode.
So she's always going to be Amy March for me from the like, 90s Little Women.
Yeah, she's Amy March for me.
The Winona Ryder one?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yes, yeah. I love it. That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
So in The Forsaken, like, I guess, before we kind of get into the different kind of three kind of plot thread structures, I'd like to pose a question to the both of you, if I may. I thought the title was kind of weird. What do we think about the title as it relates to the plot of the episode? Is there a titular Forsaken? Are we all Forsaken? Is it, like, Odo and Luxana for people not understanding them? Like, where are we at with the title?
This title is so dramatic. Like, I didn't see it as connecting to really anything. Like, I think the obvious connection you could make is the computer life form that has been floating through space and just wants a home, and all, we could talk about that later, but the whole puppy life form thing, it just seemed weird that they were like, oh, it's like a puppy. And then the title of the episode is The Forsaken. Like, it's very, like, there's a tonal problem between the title and the actual content of the episode.
It is really serious. And I feel like the computer life form is really the only, it feels like a little bit grasping at straws, but that is really the only thing I can think of, because I don't know, we don't know enough about Odo to know, like, how he got from the research lab to Deep Space Nine. So, like, was he abandoned? Was he, like, did he go there on his own? Like, it just, we don't know enough information to make that connection, I think.
I guess so, Luxana does say that must have been really lonely.
Yeah.
And talking about like growing up in a lab. So maybe that's the connection between the Forsaken and that storyline. But yeah, I mean, I still think you'd have to be reading a lot into like the mythos of Odo to get there.
It's almost like this episode could have been titled like Strays, like Stray Dog, or like people like, you know, like neglecting, like, you know, not understanding like Xana or Odo or whatever. So if I had a time machine, I'd go back and I'd talk to Don and Michael Piller and I'd be like, hey, what about Strays?
I feel like,
and I'd be like, no, Matt, go home. Who are you? You
I
have
feel
a time
like...
machine? What?
I feel like you should write them a letter like now about how that title is incorrect.
Well, Michael Piller's dead, so I can't do that, but I don't know about Don Carlos dying.
No.
Away, but, you know, maybe. Well, no. We'll look it up after.
Got
all right,
serious
so let's dive into...
Maybe you should just tweet it.
Right? <There's> the...
Tweeting it is basically like putting it out into the universe, so,
yeah.
You know, wherever he is, wherever Piller is, you know, maybe he'll
yeah.
see it.
I'm going to do a change.org petition to read
to change the episode title.
All right. So let's dive into our kind of our plot discussion here. Let's start with Julian and the various ambassadors. What did we think about that? I think it was definitely kind of played for laughs, but some of them kind of fell a little flat for me and kind of were drenched in entitlement. What did you all feel about Julian and the ambassadors? Tessa, let's start with you.
I absolutely hated this storyline, so I might not be the best person to go first, but I'll give it a go. To me, this really triggers my whole, like, I'm in grad school, so there's a lot of like, oh, well, we had to do it, and so you have to do it too. Like, and that just like Cisco's explanation for, oh, well, we've all had to deal with like rude VIPs, like all I could think of was, you know, oh well, we all had to, you know, do comps, write a dissertation this way, you know, deal with unpleasant advisors, like just, you know, suck it up and like go, you know.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's just kind of, I really didn't like how Cisco handled this situation. Like, I felt like he could have been a lot more empathetic and a lot more, you know, like, it's not cool to make your subordinates do something that's really your job, like, you know, just because you can. And so to me, that kind of came off as, I don't know, it didn't put Cisco in the best light for me. But again, that might be me bringing my personal baggage into this particular episode. But that's, I just disliked that intensely.
I could see how it would be like seen as almost like a hazing ritual.
Well, that's what he says. He says Curzon
yeah.
did it to him, and so
yeah.
he's doing it to Julian now.
And Julian seems, like, actively uncomfortable at the beginning. Like, I get Julian is a really good chatty person, and he does like talking, and so I feel like that might be part of why Cisco chose him for that role. And I didn't look at it the same way as you, probably because we have different backgrounds. So, like, for me, it was more comedic. Not the conversation between him, Julian and Cisco, like that kind of, it wasn't the best, but just having to watch Julian like uncomfortably handle these people that were all, a little high strung, and they, that one woman was, horrified by the sex programs in the holosuite. And I was like, oh, she needs the sex holosuite. But
she
then I was like,
needs it.
Yeah. I was like, she needs to, like, let her guard down a little bit.
Well, I think for me, too, I was just kind of horrified by the idea that Julian is only worth treating well by the ambassadors if he saves their lives. Like, he
yeah,
has to go through
that.
This incredibly dangerous situation in order to earn their respect, instead of just being like, he's a person, he should have your respect. And that, to me, just seemed very,
yeah.
like, I don't know, like, weirdly hierarchical for Star Trek.
Right. I think one of the funny aspects to me was more like Julian making up reasons why Cisco wasn't there to greet the ambassadors, and the ambassadors being like, wait, I want to see that whatever that thing is that Cisco's doing, when it like wasn't something that was actually happening. So that part was what was comedic for me, just like him lying and them being like, oh, I'm interested, tell me more.
Yeah, but he had some pretty great facial expressions in this too. Like, yeah. Just every time something would happen, it's not quite Jim face, but it's almost Jim face. It's like proto. He's like this close to looking at the camera.
That's great.
No, and I think like maybe
Matt, what were
like,
you saying?
Yeah, no, I know we've kind of like talked about this before, and even like Q-less is kind of coming up to me too, but like a lot of the times, like Star Trek is a period of its time, whether you're watching the original series or any of the 90s shows or like even the stuff that's airing now. And I think a lot of times in this kind of 90s era Star Trek, especially, but I think it's in all of the eras too, when they do play things for comedy, and it's like why sitcoms as an example don't necessarily age the best in terms of like a lot of TV, like the jokes are based on a lot of the certain kind of cultural understandings and assumptions that are contemporary to like 20th century Earth in this case, as opposed to 24th century Starfleet. So when you have things that are kind of like this VIP hierarchical entitlement, or the idea of like, we did this, you have to pay your dues, and it's like, well, it's even like thinking about like, and this is a bit of a tangent, but like student loan cancellation, right? Where it's like, well, that's not fair if you cancel like existing student loan debt, because I had to take out loans and I had to go through and I had to pay my dues and do that, in the way that we have these markers in society. And so like, I do agree that like you can, based on different backgrounds and, you know, different responses, it's supposed to be funny and it's played for comedy. But like a lot of comedy, when you kind of peel it back, there are some not great foundational like assumptions that kind of come through there once you do it. And like Q-less being an example of like Q being like jealous of Vash and kind of that whole patriarchal kind of entitlement again. Oops, I just punched my mic.
Creepy
really animated about entitlement. Yeah, creepy exploit.
Exactly. Well, have creepy I got the rest of the episode for you if we're going to talk about entitlement. But I do love you noted this, Elise, the whole like 0400 meeting that Cisco comes up with. That was hilarious. Like, we'll have a meeting at 0400. And it's like, when do you people sleep?
But I love the bully and ambassador is like, we better still have this probe meeting at 0400. And I'm like, 0400 is like a time that does not exist to me. Like, that is prime sleeping time. Having to like be awake at that time would be garbage.
I am sure there is like a Trek fan out. I'm like positive that there's a Trek fan out there that has actually figured out like how star dates and like time and like the way that they measure it in the episodes actually work. And I would actually kind of be fascinated to know if 0400 is actually 4 a.m. Like,
right.
Because, like, I come from a military background, and 0400 is 4 a.m.
Yeah, that's what I took it as.
I think it would be closer to 6, which is still early for a meeting, because and I don't know if Deep Space Nine has, like, referenced this yet, but they're on, like, the Bajoran, like, time schedule calendar, and Bajor has a 26-hour day as opposed to a 24-hour day. And I don't know if they've established that. So like, yeah, this is getting probably a little bit minute because I don't know if I don't remember if they've established that this yet in the show. So either way, 4 a.m., 6 a.m., like it works the same way, but
6 a.m. is still a time that doesn't.
Oh, no,
6
totally.
A.m. is still a time that doesn't exist to me.
Yeah.
I wake up, I try to wake up at 7:30, 8 o'clock. So, yeah. Also, I think we should also cancel student debt, just to throw that out there.
Just to make your position clear here.
Yes.
as I go off on a weird tangent about that.
Just because you had to do something terrible doesn't mean that the next generation has to do the same thing. Like,
exactly.
Have a little empathy, which is another theme of this episode. So,
exactly.
You know, bring it around.
Yes. Does anyone have anything to add on the Julian and the ambassador's plot?
I will say it's been a while since I've watched any of these episodes, and I had forgotten just how like rumpled Julian is. Like, his hair is just like always looks like he just like did this. I can't. I know visual. podcasting is not a visual media, as my co-hosts like to show, but he always looks like, it always looks like he just ran like his hands through his hair. It's not quite like Einstein level like dishevelment, but it always is just like that slight dishevelment, and I appreciate that. It tells me a lot about who he is as a person.
More on this later, but yeah, it works for me. So I guess the main, the story plot is this alien life form computer program thing. I found this to be, I zoned out during a lot of this.
So I actually have a question about this. Is this the A storyline or is it the B storyline? Because I think that Julian's is definitely C storyline. But right. I honestly couldn't tell while watching this episode if the A storyline was Odo Loxana or if it was the puppy computer life form thing. Like, to me, I agree with you that this particular storyline seems to be more MacGuffin-esque. Like, it's just there to trap Odo and Loxana in the turbo... Let me try that again. This storyline literally just exists to trap Odo and Loxana in the turbo lift and to give, like, the other characters something to do because we have to, you know, have Dax on the bridge doing things. We have to have O'Brien doing things. So, like, to me, it just didn't seem as important as the Odo-Loxana storyline. So is this A or B?
You're probably right. To me, it was not as interesting as the Odo-Loxana part, like, and I do think it took up less time in the episode. When I had originally organized my notes, I had it last, and then I was like, you know what? I don't think it should go last. So I think you're on point.
Oh, no, like, we should definitely talk about it. To me, that was the other confusing part of this episode, is that you normally expect the stuff that's happening on the bridge to be the A storyline, but right, that just didn't seem to be the case. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, I would agree as well that it's the B plot, and I think, like, I wonder how much of, like, that structure has to do with it being kind of early DS9, and again, like, they're, throughout the first season, kind of, we've had a lot of character work where there have been episodes where it's been like, oh, this is a Dax episode, or this is a Quark episode, or this is an Odo episode, and kind of, like, you know, getting into them a bit there, and this is definitely, like, you say, like, a Odo and Loxana two-hander, but I kind of wonder if this episode had come later in the series as it kind of moved away from being, I mean, it's still episodic television, but, you know, playing with the kind of that Roddenberry box and being more, even more character-driven and even more serialized kind of as the series went on, if we still would have had the kind of classic Trek computer problem or like alien of the week problem to solve, or if it would have been more kind of like character driven, because like I can see a version of this episode where it spends less time on this alien computer program problem to solve and you get more of like character work with Julian and then Odo and Loxana, right? So I just wonder if it's kind of like the limitations in air quotes or the structures or the conceptions of what like an episode of Star Trek needs to have at this point. And then even then, like, it's kind of, like, pushing them forward. And even, like, there's, like, TNG episodes that are, like, similar that have this kind of structure where, like, the whole ship has a problem. But, like, it's... I don't know, it just feels, like, less tacked on. Like, the whole alien computer program where just randomly shows up out of the probe from the wormhole and everything else just feels like, we need something, so let's do this. Like, as opposed, I don't know.
Right.
I'm repeating myself. I'm petering out here.
And
now,
I think, but... yeah. And I think this is something that Tessa kind of mentions later. But the way you're phrasing that, it does remind me of the TNG episode where like Picard is in the turbo lift with the children, and how all this crazy stuff's happening, and like the episode's really more about how he interacts with the kids, I think.
Right. But
I don't know if you meant the. I know you meant the mention. You were going to mention something about a turbo lift, and I wasn't sure.
Completely different about Picard and a turbo lift to talk about later.
Oh,
so
great!
Great for remembering. There's another scene with Picard and a turbo lift that somehow.
I feel like everything was going wrong. And it was really, for me, the episode was more important to see, like, Picard interacting with that, with those children, because he, like, famously doesn't like kids, which is, or perceived as not liking kids, which is something I relate to a little bit. But I do find that, like, the problem with the Enterprise in that episode, and then obviously in this one, the computer alien is just a, like, a vehicle to get the character parts.
It also doesn't really help that I feel like all of the actors are kind of, except for Miles, everybody kind of feels like they're phoning it in on this episode. Like, they're just like, oh, we're here, we're doing this thing about this life form, like, we're gonna just do some things. Like, the only character that seems like legit invested in this is Miles O'Brien, which is fair because he's like 110% invested in everything, which is why he's such a great character.
I love him.
Yeah, and so that we've got some really classic O'Brien engineering problems that are happening in this particular plot, which I think saves it from, that's like the only thing that makes it kind of interesting is the fact is his character work here. But we've seen it before, right? We've seen him do this on TNG. We're going to see him do it again on DS9. Like, this is just his wheelhouse. The other characters just seem very like, I don't know. I'm also really horrified that Sisko's first impulse was to just like, oh, we found this abandoned mechanical life form, let's abandon it again. Like, it just seemed very like anti-utopian, which is not what you think of when it comes to Star Trek. Like, his first instinct is to like push it off the ship instead of trying to figure out like how to communicate with it or how to trap it, which is what Miles does eventually. You know, it just, I don't know, it seemed very like, let's solve this problem by just pushing it away instead of like trying to figure it out.
It kind of reminds me, again, I'm always reminded of my favorite Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, of when they're talking with the Klingons at the beginning about human rights, and they're like, human rights, and it just, the very name is racist. I know I've said this on this podcast so many times, but it just feels like they have the same vibe for this mechanical life form. They're like, whatever, it's not human.
Seems very weird though, because especially, I mean, I'm sure you've talked on the show about how Sisko isn't Picard, and nor should he be, but like, it just seems like in this era of Star Trek usually seems much more concerned with like communication and like, you know, creative and constructive problem solving rather than just like ignoring the problem, I guess, or like being violent. Right. And like abandoning this life form again would actually be kind of violent, and so it's, to me, it just seemed kind of out of character for him to just be like, get it out of the station, like, you know what I mean, like, even though we do get that funny joke at the end where he's like, keep it off the furniture, and that was pretty funny, but
it was,
you
cute.
Know,
yeah,
it just, to me, that the characters here didn't seem like themselves, or they didn't seem like they were doing things in ways that I would expect them to, except for O'Brien.
Yeah, I love anytime Miles is angry because something's wrong with the computers. It's always, I just really
so all the time.
Cole Meany does such a good job at just like being annoyed. Like, he's so good at it.
I feel you should have a bingo game on this podcast of times that Miles O'Brien compares the Deep Space Nine computer to the Enterprise. Like, it's always the Enterprise, it was like dancing a waltz, and this is like being in a wrestling match.
I'm just like, Miles, do you want to go back to your former job? Like, is that what you're saying?
He's like that person that secretly loves it, but is going to complain the entire time.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I love it.
100%.
Yeah, I see that. I love him. He's great.
But yeah, what did you think, Matt, of the... We've been talking a lot about how much we disliked this. What did you think about this structure?
I mean, it's fine. Like, I mean, I would have done it differently. I don't think you necessarily, like, need the added layer of, like, a nondescript, not really explored, non-carbon based artificial intelligence like form that you're gonna say is like a, like, it's very Star Trek to have, here's this complex science mumbo jumbo, or like tech discussion, but we're going to compare it to something simple that's understand, like it's a lost puppy, right? So that's very Star Trek. But then just to like, just to have it to solve the problem, I'm going to build it a doghouse and keep it off the furniture and whatever, and then never talk about it again, just feels very Star Trek. And it's like, did you need that whole rigmarole just to like, the turbo lift could just break down, it's a Cardassian station, like whatever, like it just wasn't added element that I don't know, like I don't know if it really like enhanced any of the storylines, and like you said before, it was very like MacGuffin-y and it's fine, but like the meat of the episode is what we're gonna kind of get into here in terms of the Odo Luxana stuff, and like
I just, that had to happen, we really want to talk about to break down.
I do want to say one thing about what you were saying. I feel like I could see a version of this episode where, remember at the beginning when Miles is getting like up in arms because something is like 13% below whatever standard it was supposed to be, and the computer is like, Cardassians think anything 20% or under is just fine. That could have been, whatever that was, that could have been the reason why all of this happened. That would have been enough.
I feel like the Cardassians have lower standards. Yeah, I love how that's supposed to tell us something about the Cardassians, like, as if we didn't really need to know that about them, because we already know that they're like genocidal fascists. But, you know, hey, they also don't care about the safety of their employees either. Although I will say that while I was watching it, I'm currently playing through Mass Effect 3 again. And there's a scene where you talk to like Engineer Adams, and he's just like, because your ship has been like rebuilt by this like evil like governmental group, and he's like, yeah, they don't really care as much about safety standards, so we're gonna need like these parts to like bring it up to like Alliance code. And that's all I could think of when he said that, like when they were like, it's within like 13%, and I was just like, yeah, it turns out evil people don't care about their employees.
100% agree. But yeah, I just feel like that could have been the explanation for everything that happened. Like, you didn't need to have this the probe business.
Are we going to move on to the what we all are like secretly holding on to in our hearts as the A plot of the episode?
Can we talk about Luxana's pink hair? I have heart eyes emoji in my face right now. That pink hair is
she says brilliant. So many great things in this episode. Like, Luxana is a character so quotable, but one of my faves happens right at the very beginning when she's talking about her stolen brooch, and she says, I always wear that brooch with this hair. Like, it's just
I know, I loved that.
The perfect description of her as a character. And I really realized through watching this that Luxana is really like a proto Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek.
Oh my god, totally. Totally. Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh my god. I feel like you just like broke my brain. That's so true.
I mean, I obviously love that character from Schitt's Creek, but I feel like there's a lot of Luxana Troi's DNA in that character after watching this particular episode.
I also got, like, Elle Woods vibes from, like, matching the brooch to the hair. Like, it just felt like something she would have done also. But I feel like Moira Rose is, like, really on point.
But, yeah, I mean, Luxana's camp. Like, she is, I mean, she's not explicitly coded as queer in this particular series, but everything about her is just very theatrical, it's very over the top, it's very much about sort of those, like, appearances, and about sort of, I mean, again, it's about queering, like, expectations, even though she herself appears to be straight, that we know of. Is anyone in Star Trek straight? No. I mean, like, at the end of the day?
No.
But, you know, she wears these. She
maybe
wears
some
these,
Enterprise
like,
characters, but that's about it.
But, like, no, she, like, wears, like, these like, beautiful wigs and these just, like, over-the-top dresses. Like, there's a scene where she comes in to hit on Odo, and she's wearing what I can only describe as, like, a very, like, petticoats with, like, a lace top, which may or may not have a liner. It was really hard to tell if the lace was just like conveniently covering like her bits or not.
I called that her mother of the bride look. Yeah. Like, she just looked like she was like hosting a wedding.
Yeah. And so like she's always been like this. Like she was like this in Next Generation. This character really came like ready to go like in Next Generation. Yeah. But we get to see that here, and it's just that is like the part that she's playing. She's just over the top, sucks all the energy, oxygen and energy out of the room every time she's in there. And of course she's played by Majel Barrett, who is just like a true Star Trek legend. She was obviously married to Gene Roddenberry, but you know, as I said at the beginning of the episode, my partner and I have been watching through TOS them for the first time. You know, me, obviously I've seen this many, many times, and I have a lot of respect for Nurse Chapel as a character. Like, she plays that character very straight. It's very interesting to see, like, her, what she was doing when she was younger. But I also want to remind people that she was originally supposed to be the number one, the XO of the Enterprise in the original Christopher Pike version of Star Trek. So if you watch the TOS Menagerie, you actually get to see her play like this officer material. And it's always been kind of, as much as I love Spock and you know, Kirk and Bones and all of the Enterprise people, it's always kind of made me sad that we never got to see her as that character, that character only exists in the Menagerie two-parter, because to me, she was the most daring female character on that show in a lot of ways, you know, perhaps, you know, equal to Nichelle Nichols, because she was playing a female character who was essentially in charge, who was essentially very assertive and very, in a position of authority. And so, you know, she wasn't just, unfortunately, as much as I love Nichelle Nichols and Uhura, she really is just like a glorified, you know, phone operator in a lot of ways,
right?
And so it was really cool to see like a woman play a character that was essentially in charge of all these men, and I'm always a little sad that we never got to see more of that in the original. So, you know, it's really cool. And you mentioned, Elise, that she voices the computer for Starfleet. Yeah. And so just, you know, this is a different part for her. This is very different than all of the stuff she'd done for Star Trek so far, and I love it. I'm here for it. Sorry, that was my Majel Barrett rant. About like,
thank you.
I'm here for it, yeah.
I think one of the interesting things about Loxana specifically for me is you don't see, especially kind of at the time that like Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and stuff were airing, middle-aged women commanding the presence in the room that like Loxana does, and then also like being as in tune kind of with with their sexuality as much as like Loxana is too, because normally like, you would see that kind of coded as being like a stereotypical kind of like sex pot kind of, you know, sort of character as being more kind of femme fatale and being younger and being kind of this other way. And the fact that like Loxana is a mother, a middle-aged mother with a grown daughter, and kind of owns her sexuality in a way, I think is really cool to see. And I mean, yeah, in TNG a lot, like we talked before, it kind of gets played for laughs, but like even adding kind of the pathos here, and then the idea of like the I don't want to be ordinary, and just I just think it's really cool. And I don't think it, like, Loxana is a character that we get a lot on Star Trek, and we get a lot on, you know, TV at the time, kind of over the 80s and then the 90s. I think it's maybe getting a little bit better now, but not quite where it needs to be. And I think it's always kind of an interesting window into Loxana as a kind of fully three-dimensional character, and being given things to do and kind of control and some like more agency in situations that you wouldn't necessarily see. And I think it is really interesting that there's the three ambassadors that we mentioned before that are like full of entitlement and like are making Julian's life miserable and doing that. And Loxana's part of their crew. She's there for whatever reason, to check out the station or whatever contrived thing in opening captain or commander's log or station log.
The wormhole.
That they're there, but yeah, but she's not about that. And she's like about living her life to her, to like her fullest and how she wants to live her life, and it's like we stan a legend, I guess, is how I will finish
it. Yeah, I just love and appreciate her like ability to take up space. Like, she is like, I'm here, this is who I am, this is who I want to be, and you just have to deal with it. And I think that's awesome.
I think it's cool too to see her outside of her relationship with Deanna, because I love it when she comes on to Next Generation, and I do like the development of her relationship with Deanna. But it always kind of confines her into this space of being a mother and being kind of an embarrassing mother, right? Like, she's the mom that shows up and disrupts everything, and she's always after Picard, and there's a joke there. But I like seeing her in this context more as a woman, more as an ambassador, more as somebody who has their own things going on outside of her relationship with Deanna.
I 100% agree with that. I mean, she mentions her daughter at one point, but it's not anywhere near the main point of this episode, and that's pretty great.
Also, I love that she's, like, not interested in Bashir. Like, she is part of this group, but she's not following them around. She's not, like, talking to him. She's just like, oh, Odo, like, you know, and, like, wanders off, which is great.
I have a question about the brooch situation. Did we know before now that Betazoids can't, like, read the thoughts of Ferengi or similar species? Like, I don't remember if that was something we knew before now.
I feel like we didn't, and I feel like that might be something that's been inconsistent, but I will look that up.
Well, there's that whole episode where she talks about the time that she and Deanna got kidnapped by the Ferengi, which, frankly, is, like, the creepiest episode of Star Trek ever. But I don't know. I can't remember if that was something that was established then or not.
Right. That's what I was trying to remember, and I forgot to look it up. when she goes to, like, hit on Odo, as you mentioned before, where she's wearing that, like, lace sheer top, she says a line that had me, like, eye-rolling but also hysterically laughing. She says to him, "You are the thin beige line between order and chaos." And I was like, I got some, like, gross, like, Blue Lives Matter vibes from that, mostly just because I envisioned one of those, like, American flag stickers with, like, the blue line. Or I guess they have the red line ones now for firefighters. And Tessa, you shared that tweet with me the other day. Like, no one's mad at firefighters. Like, this doesn't make sense.
They're just supposed to be there and be sexy and spray water on things. Like, why are we bringing them into this?
Yeah. Although I did, well, never mind, we'll cut that. Yeah, so, like, I definitely got, like, those kind of vibes. And we will never forget that Odo is 100% part of All Cops Are Bastards. But, yeah, that was a really funny line.
But he's just so beige. Like, that made me laugh. Like, I thought about the cop thing later, and, like, yeah, I agree with you on that. But, like, if I were to describe Odo as a character, at least at this point in the series, it would be he's beige. Like, he's very one-dimensional. In fact, this is an episode that I think tries to take him beyond that one-dimensionality.
Right.
But, like, he's beige. Like, I don't, he's very one note in a lot of ways. Like, even his skin is kind of matches his uniform at this point. Like, he's just a very like black character.
Yeah, beige always makes, I always think of beige. I used to be a big Sex and the City watcher, and that is a show that I cannot visit anymore. But the big, like, love in Sarah Jessica Parker's character's life, like, leaves her and, like, meets this other person, and that doesn't really work out. But the whole point is that that person, their relationship isn't as complicated as his relationship with Carrie Bradshaw. And then it's just the woman that he's dating and then marries, like, paints their whole apartment beige, and all the furniture, everything's beige. And it's just, like, it made me think of that also, like, there wasn't much depth to that character that he, like, married, and it just felt, like, similar, even though not related at all. But that's just, like, a memory that beige just makes me think of that.
This also made me question Bajoran uniform color structure. Like, I actually had to think about this because I'd never really thought about, like, what do the Bajoran uniform colors mean? Like, because we always think about, like, the Starfleet ones, but I don't actually understand the system of the Bajoran ones because they are also color-coded. Like, Kira has the red one, and then the engineer whose name I can't remember, I feel terrible, who's helping O'Brien is like a darker blue gray, and then Odo is beige. Like, what? Like, what's the?
I wonder if it's similar. I mean, it feels similar, like beige instead of yellow for security, red for ops, blue for science, I guess. I don't know.
So, like, yeah, there's, like, the engineering is that kind of, like, grayish that we were just talking about before. And then we see kind of, like, a purple, like, the Bajoran nurses in the infirmary have kind of this purpley-blue sort of situation going on. Because remember we saw Kelly Taylor's mom in one of those earlier this season, Ellie.
Oh, yes. Or Elise. Yeah. Oh, I always forget her name. Yeah, that was in Babel.
But she was the nurse.
But it was in Babel when everyone was like talking in nonsense.
So, listeners,
Kelly Taylor of 90210, if it wasn't clear.
Yeah, sorry. So, listeners, if you know in depth what the Bajoran uniform convention is, and even the Bajoran rank structure, because I've never quite figured that out, tweet at us at Podrace, and also confirm if Bajor has a 26-hour day or not, because I'm sure you know more than I do. Thank you, listeners.
Anne Gillespie is the actress's name, and I just need everyone to know that I tried to Google it and I remembered it before I saw it, so my brain is still working.
Speaking of Googly, like it when brains work, don't we, folks? Speaking of Googling, I wasn't able to find out about the Betazoids reading Ferengi minds, but I will just say that this episode is a nice encapsulation of everything that frustrates me about Odo, because again, Odo grows on you. I do like Odo as a character, despite the mixed feelings that we're talking about, but he does racially profile the thief that ends up being the thief that stole the brooch, because it's like, oh, you can't read Ferengis. This guy is like related to the Ferengis, so maybe you can't read him. So by my powers of deduction, I'm like, based on this guy's species, he's guilty. And then he ended up being guilty. And you know, we know that Odo loves to racially profile people like Klingons and everything else. And the show often, in a way of saying how good Odo is at his job, he's often right, which is frustrating. But then also we have Odo's just this really fascinating character, and we're really kind of, I think we saw it a lot in this episode where he's literally like, the episode starts out by playing it like Picard and Loxana Redux, where like Loxana's like horny for the stiff upper lip, kind of like, you know, closed off like character on the show, and she's gonna chase him and it's gonna be funny. And then they have that really human moment, those really human, for lack of a better words, because neither of them are human characters, moments there where it kind of, the facade literally melts, and it's like,
I'm just,
and like that's what fascinates me about Odo, is like the person inside, and like not to like get too genuine and overshare too much in my own podcast, but that idea of, I think Odo feels really deeply, he just doesn't know what to do with it, so like he just shuts down, right? And so like any window into that side of Odo I'm interested in. It's just unfortunate how we get there later on in the series, because I don't love how we get there, but we'll get there in a couple seasons, and I don't want to spoil anything, so I will be quiet now.
Well, and also just to go back to what you said about the parallels between this episode with Odo and Picard, here's my turbo lift fact. So there's a great callback here. There's a scene where, but right before they both get into the turbo lift, where Odo's on the turbo lift and before he steps off, he kind of looks both ways to see if she's like lying in wait for him. And Picard does the exact same thing in an episode of TNG where he like gets off the lift and looks both ways because he knows that Loxana is on the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And so there's just like this great visual callback there to link. It really links what her attraction to Odo with her attraction to Picard. And of course she says later, you know, I'm always attracted to quiet men, which so there's kind of that aspect of it as well.
I'm gonna rewind a little bit. I didn't notice that, but I love that you noticed that, the looking both ways. I feel like when she says to him, I've never been with a shapeshifter, like, he's so uncomfortable, but I feel like she's almost talking to him like he could be, like, a sex toy for her. Like, he can, like, change into whatever, like, whatever shape. Which kind of was, I thought was great, but Odo was like, no, thank you. I was a little bit bothered by the conversation that Sisko and Odo had when Odo goes to speak with him about trying to get, like, Loxana off his back, kind of. Mostly because Sisko's, like, has a very, like, what's the big deal aspect, when I feel like he's not interested, and that is enough for it to be a big deal. And I know that the majority of reports of sexual harassment come from women, but there are, I mean, it is sexual harassment in this episode. Loxana is coming on to him, and he's not interested, and I think he's pretty clear and, like, I thought he was clear in his body language and what he says and saying it to her, even if she wasn't hearing it. And I think, you know, Loxana's a good person, and I don't think she would, like, take it further than that. But it was a little uncomfortable for me that Sisko... I felt like if it was one of his... Like, if it was a woman coming to him with a similar situation, I feel like he would have been taken it a little bit more seriously than he did, because he's like, well, what's the problem? Maybe it's okay for you to get involved, and like, that isn't, Odo's not interested in that. That should be the end of the conversation.
Yeah, so I definitely agree. I think this goes back to what Matt was saying earlier about if you, this is a product of its time, right? It was considered to be very funny if women did this, right? Like this idea of the overpowering, like, you know, older woman who's just pursuing the man. And of course that is, you know, the end of this, there's nothing wrong with a woman being aggressive or being,
Or
being, you know, the person who initiates these things. But obviously if somebody's uncomfortable or somebody says, you know, no, that's the end of the story. And that's obviously not what's happening here. I did read the situation with Sisko a little differently than you did, I think, mainly because Loxana's not his employee, and so it wasn't to me coming across as like, oh, well, you're the boss and your job is to, like, you know, have a no sexual harassment policy. That's this thing.
That's entirely valid.
But yeah. I also thought that what they were doing here was supposed to help us contrast Sisko with Picard, because Picard was always so uncomfortable with Loxana, and I just like that Sisko kind of reads her differently, that he's just like, oh, she's, like, a sex-positive person. And, like, you know, would it be so bad to be with somebody who was, like, sex-positive and who, like, you know... Like, I think what he was trying to say was is that, like, Odo needs to not, like, maybe judge people based on gender roles. And that's kind of maybe what I got from it. But you're absolutely right, though. Like, there is, he shouldn't have necessarily, like, said, oh, well, it's your problem to deal with. But... To me, it just came across as them trying to develop Sisko as somebody who's a little bit more maybe understanding of, like, the reasons for Odo's objections have more to do with his gendered expectations than they do with, like, his actual attraction to her. But that might also be me reading way too much into this interaction, too.
No, I mean, we love to read too much into these Deep Space Nine episodes. I think sometimes we read into them a lot. And we're like, this is probably wasn't the intent, but this is how we're reading it. And that part of that is who we are as people. And part of that is the fact that it's 2021 and I read into almost everything now.
Right.
It just, that conversation crossed with the conversation of when Sisko explains to Julian how he got out of dealing with VIP visitors or guests in his dealing with Curzon is that, oh, yeah, I punched someone because they were being predatory to one of the female, I guess, officers or whoever it was. And I definitely don't think that what happened here with Luxana is equal to whatever was implied by that. What happened, like, that seemed a little bit more like rapey and really a lot worse. So I don't want to say that they're the same thing, but it was just a weird contrast to see like how he acted in the one thing, one situation where he punched someone, and this where he's like kind of almost like lighten up a little bit.
Right. That conversation honestly made me super uncomfortable because then he says, well, don't punch anyone. I won't be as understanding as Curzon. I'm like, so he's not supposed to punch anyone even if they try to rape someone? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Like, that to me, again, seemed like kind of weird writing.
Yeah. I'm pro-punching rapists.
Yeah.
Rapists and Nazis can be punched all the time.
Like, that is another position that we should make very clear. We are pro-punching rapists. So.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to choose violence. But like on the other hand, from like us loving Luxana and obviously we're different than Odo, I really loved when he was shouting at her in the turbo lift, all the ways in which he's different from her. He's like, and I turn into liquid every 16 hours. And her replying, I can swim. I was hysterical.
Oh,
I'm like,
gosh,
this woman is up for anything, and I love it.
She's
obviously
so
Odo doesn't
positive.
Love it, but I did.
Yeah, she's so,
I know,
sex
it was so
positive,
great,
and I love that. Like, I, you know, yeah. I think that she is just someone, like you said, who's up for everything, and she's very open-minded, like about, you know, trying new things and doing what, you know, trying things that people would like and not just thinking about, you know, herself. And I love that scene. Like, I just thought that was so funny.
Yeah. It was great.
I liked your note about this being Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah. So I actually just finally caught up on Grey's Anatomy. TLDR, I stopped watching it mid-season 11, and during COVID, I decided to start from the beginning. And while simultaneously watching season 17, which was just on. So I caught up, actually, yesterday. But everyone knows that everything important happens on Grey's Anatomy in the elevator. Like, loves happen, breakups happen, secret affairs happen in the elevator.
Proposals.
So I just enjoy proposal.
Not
it's
in
just
the on-call room?
Well, that too. But it's just like a thing. I remember even the like soft pilot of Private Practice when Addison was like in the elevator with Tim Daly. I don't remember his character's name. And she was like, where I'm from, we'd be dating already. And he's like, who the fuck are you? And it was, or something like that. And it was just elevators. It was great.
Things happen in elevators. They're liminal spaces,
they really
because
do.
They don't exist in one space or another. They're the between space. So anything can happen there.
Exactly. What happens in the elevator stays in the elevator. So another thing I felt really, I related to Luxana so much when they were in the turbo lift and they were stuck, because Odo is just like, what did he say? He was like, let's just be quiet. And she was like, I really don't think I can. And he was like, he realized that she had no control over it. And I was like, I've never felt so seen before, because when I'm really nervous, I, like, can't shut the fuck up. So I was just like, this is how I would be acting.
And the way that Majel plays that is so perfect, because she says that with all of Loxana's, like, confidence, but she, like, slides down the side, you know, to sit down on the floor at the same time. And so it's this perfect mixture of her being Luxana and being over the top and being like, I can't stop talking. Like, this is just who I am. But also, like, demonstrating that she is actually kind of scared and, like, you know, feeling
a
little vulnerable.
She really,
like, it's a pretty good acting
moment that
there.
Yeah, she definitely showed her vulnerability in that scene. I really liked that scene a lot. Although, contrast, I was kind of laughing when the people on the bridge were discussing how, I guess Kira was like, if he doesn't get back to his pail in time, it just seemed like, I don't know why that line cracks me up. I didn't ever care about the pail, but when we rewatched Progress the other day, Jake and Nog stole the pail as a joke, and it was mean, but also made me hysterically laughing. So I'm just, like, obsessed with the pail now. And just to have other people talking about the pail is really funny.
Well, I love how none of them know what happens. Like, they know that he has to, like, turn back into his liquid state, but they don't really understand it because he won't tell them about it, which we can talk about in a minute.
Right.
But, like, I love that she sounds so, like, concerned. And I don't know if it's because she, like, thinks that he has to have the pail, or if she...
Yeah, that's the impression I get.
Like, I feel like she's like, I don't know what's going to happen if he turns into liquid in the elevator. Like, I don't know if he's going to die or need medical attention. Like, she seems very concerned in a way that, like, I guess we're not, because we know that he's going to be okay. So I just think that that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, as of now, only the viewer has ever seen him shapeshift. No one there has seen it, I think. Until now.
What's I gonna say?
Don't remember. I was about to say, we've been talking a lot.
No, I just, there's, because Carol saw that line where she's like, Odo, don't try and like shapeshift out because the turbo lifts or are like supercharged by whatever, and he would get like electrocuted, and he kind of like just sighs, and then Loxana goes, it would be rude anyways. This is a good moment too in the elevator.
I mean, no, it would be like, mean to leave someone in there by themselves.
Totally would be. Although at that point, Odo wants to get out.
Oh yeah, totally.
I guess just to kind of like skip ahead or kind of like keep things flowing and keep moving. What am I trying to say? Lots of feelings, but it's really hot in here, so it's hard to get them out. Loxana is so emotionally intuitive and emotionally intelligent, and yeah, of course she's like telepathic, and that probably like feeds into it, but like through all like the discussion of where we are and how they get to the elevator and like the picnic planning and how what was I gonna say? How persistent Loxana is. Just like the way Odo and Loxana's relationships develop to that point of like actually like putting down some of those walls and like seeing what's beneath kind of the facade and the performance from both of them is just a really powerful and intimate moment that I really kind of like appreciated. And like in some ways, at least for them in that moment, it's like it's a different form of intimacy than sex and you know, kind of like physical intimacy and stuff there, because of course there are different flavors of intimacy, but it's this like really deep and like enduring one to like see someone that way and to let someone else see you that way, like when she takes off her wig and like, you know, like Michelle Barrett's so good in this episode. And the way kind of like just the performance is stripped away and like, I don't know. It's just, it's a really cool and it's a really powerful moment. And I'm curious to hear more what you both have to say about it. I'm just a little bit at a loss for words because I find it so powerful, and it's like relationship goals, whether that be a romantic or a platonic relationship or like somewhere in between, but just that like idea of, sorry, I'm getting kind of like emotional here, doing life with someone and like building that kind of like intimacy or various forms of like intimacy in that way, that it's like that's like the real shit, and like that's the stuff that like through other things like, you know, different backgrounds or parts that and different gender roles that are like forced upon us or different identities that are forced upon us kind of by our surroundings and the way our surroundings try to define us and then we internalize those. Like truly seeing someone in that way is just like, it's really powerful. Yeah.
I can't imagine, like, Odo explains to her how he was always the entertainment when he was at parties, where it would be like, turn into a chair, do this, do that. And it just felt, I can't imagine having that experience and like vocalizing and explaining that to someone, because he seems completely mortified that that was his life for a time. And it, he had no sense of doing something for himself. He was just always trying to please everyone else. And that sucks. It reminded me of the Taylor Swift song Mirrorball, spinning in my highest heels, love shining just for you. Like, that whole song is just about how she's there to entertain, and it just felt very similar. But yeah, I can't imagine like having gone through that and then talking to someone about it. Like, it just seems so, it just is a lot.
And I loved her response to that, where she said, well, maybe you've been going to the wrong parties. You should come to one of mine. Everyone there will be there to entertain you. Which, like, it's such a sweet thing to say, but it's also, like, if I was reading a romance novel, that's what the masculine character would say. Like, you know, like, girl who's, like, pouring out her feelings. So I really loved that there was kind of this gender switch, where she's like, oh, well, no, I would just take care of that. You know, like, I would take care of you in that way, which I found genuinely sweet. This scene, like, really hit me, because I felt like a lot, and this is me, like, bringing in my own stuff, too, but, like, I felt like Odo's whole thing, where he tells her, like, no one's ever seen him like this before, and he doesn't want to look at her, and he doesn't want her help, and he's, like, mortified over, you know, this fact that he can't control his own body, and he's obviously in a lot of pain trying to hold, like, this shape that his body doesn't want to be in anymore. To me, that really read a lot like a chronic illness and a lot of internalized ableism around chronic illnesses. Like, this idea of, you know, like, I'm someone who has a chronic illness, and I hate it when people are around me, like, when I'm in pain, and I hate it when people are around me when I'm, like, when my body's doing things that I don't want it to do. And, you know, some of that is internalized ableism, this idea that, like, we're just supposed to pretend that everything is okay all the time and, like, not bother people, right, with our bodies or what they're doing. But it's also, like, you know, this idea of, like, you know, when I was growing up, not to get too emotional myself, but when I was growing up, there was always this idea of, like, you have to take care of other people. You can't just take care of yourself, right? And so for Odo, I feel like, especially since he takes, like, taking care of people, albeit in an ACAB sort of way, very seriously, for him not being able to control this or to take care of her in this moment, he has to, like, think about himself. I think that's frightening, and it's very shameful for him because of this, like, internalized ableism. And so the fact that she's able to say, like, no, it's okay, like, I will take care of you, like, as he's melting into her lap, right, and she's like, yeah, I'll take care of you, like, that to me was, like, hands down, like, the most emotional moment of the episode for me, because that's all people ever actually want to hear. They won't say it, but that is what they want to hear, like, somebody saying, I will take care of you, you know. And so I just found that incredibly powerful. And yeah, like, obviously not to spoil this for anybody, but, like, it's interesting that this is where their relationship starts, and whether or not it ends up being romantic or platonic, like, it is this deep relationship based on, like, actually seeing each other versus, you know, seeing the performance, like you said.
I agree with all of that, and I just wanted to add on that when they were sitting down together and finally, like, embraced, I, like, got a little misty-eyed. Like, it was just, it was a lot. And you just knew that she meant everything she said, and, like, I really felt like she would take care of him if
she was safe. And it's really hard to find people that are safe like that. And so for me...
totally.
Yeah, for me, that's kind of what... Maybe that should have been the episode of the... Or the title of the episode, Safe. Because I just felt like... I felt like that was just such a powerful moment.
Safe strays.
Like, nobody else around him, he felt safe enough to be that way around. But she, he could be that way with her, which I find just so powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will say... he did look a little bit like he had peanut butter rubbed all over his face before
he turned into liquid. I'm not sure how I felt about those particular special effects.
I do remember last time I watched the series, or the first time I watched the series, being a little, like, grossed out by some of the, like, Odo's about to melt makeup choices.
But did anyone else find the ending, like, really weird and abrupt? Like, they got out of the turbo lift, and then he was, like... he thanks her and it's a really nice moment and she's like, well, next time you see me, like, maybe you'll have something else to thank me for. But it's like, why did she have to leave right away? Like, what was happening? Like, there was no explanation for why that was her saying goodbye for, you know, however long it is until we see her next. Like, it wasn't like the ambassadors were all leaving just then or something. Like, it was just
It was probably only 0700 hours or something.
Yeah exactly. It was like
however much time went by.
Yeah, it just, it seemed very contrived, especially after like how beautiful that scene was. It was just like, okay, well, see you next time. Like,
until next time.
Okay, episode's over. See you next week.
That's funny.
I think just to like jump back for a moment, like something that we've been talking about over the course of the first season is the amount of Next Generation reoccurring characters that pop up on Deep Space Nine. Is like, hey, we're the spinoff show. It's like, here's Lursan Bator, here's Q and Vash, here's Luxana Troi. And I think Luxana is the one that I think works the best. And like, I think both her plot line with Odo benefit from having an existing character come in, because again, you know, we're, for the audience, is, you know, a lot of the audience is familiar with her, but only in a lot of those ways that we've talked about, as like the kooky, like, you know, mother or like quasi mother-in-law,
sex mom
to Will, right? And just like that moment we're talking about of like truly being seen, I think it also has that oomph, not only just for Odo and that sharing, but because we have that history with Luxana and have seen those other aspects of her and that kind of, like, you know, the camp and everything else. So like it's a guest star from a recurring character from another series that it really rewards. Like, I think it works either way if you don't have that history. So that's how you know it's good. But I think it really rewards being familiar with that character, whereas like something like Q-less, it's like, I don't know, it doesn't work as well for me.
This was the first TNG guest star where it really benefited us in that we learned and had plot relating to one of our main characters that didn't feel stupid. Like, I just felt like when Q was on, you know, we had a little bit of, oh, this is how Sisko is different from Picard, but the episode felt more about Q and Vash. Like, this felt like about Odo still.
Yeah, for sure.
So, agree. That was my long-winded way of saying I agree with you. Does anyone else have anything about the episode before we move on?
I guess I just want to say, just to kind of wrap up my feelings on this episode, I really liked that as we get further, and I think Matt may have mentioned something about this before, as we get further into, like, Deep Space Nine and then later into Voyager, I like that they're giving themselves permission to just do episodes about characters and romance. Like, it's not just, like, we still do have the, like, MacGuffin, like, you know, B plot or whatever, but I like the idea that it's just like, no, we're gonna tell a story about Odo and Luxana, and that's gonna be okay. It doesn't, not all science fiction has to, you know, involve, you know, weird, like, you know, computer puzzles or shooting phasers or, you know, transporter accidents. Like, you know, it can sometimes just be like you know, an exploration of a relationship between two people. And, you know, I appreciate that we can see it happening in this episode. And I definitely know that they do it more later in DS9 and in Voyager. So I really appreciated that, even if they couldn't quite commit all the way.
Right. That is why DS9 is my favorite series, just because there's such good character stuff, and it's not always, I don't always care about the plot, but I care about how the characters interact with each other and how they change over time. Like, that is the best.
I don't know, have both of you seen Before Sunrise?
I haven't. Yes. It's on my list.
Yes.
And just, like, there's this line...
Before Sunrise, it's a wonderful, wonderful film.
And I just, as we were, like, talking before we move into, like, wrap up, there's, like, this, I mean, cover yours if you don't want spoilers, at least, but I think you're pretty...
Oh, it's fine. You know, I don't care about spoilers.
We have the same thing about spoilers, but, like, there's this line in that movie that just really sticks in my bones, and I think it's kind of, like, appropriate to some of the stuff we've been talking about. And the line is, "I believe if there's any kind of God, it wouldn't be in any of us, not you or me, but in the little space in between. If there's any kind of magic in this world, it must be in the attempt of understanding someone, sharing something. I know it's almost impossible to succeed, but who really cares? The answer must be in the attempt." And it's just, so, like, as we were talking, that's nice. Just, my mind went there, and it just goosebumps sticks to my bones.
Well, yeah, and that film is very much about just focusing on a relationship between two characters. Like, that's all that film is about. So, yeah, I could definitely see a lot of parallels there.
What I'm hearing is that love is in the turbo lift.
Love is in the elevator.
Oh, Aerosmith song.
Elevator love letter. There we go.
Oh, or Love in an Elevator by Aerosmith.
There you go. All right. Well, I don't know about you both, but where I am right now, it is extremely hot, and we're in the middle of a heat wave, so I am incredibly, incredibly thirsty, and I need a long, long drink of El Terra water to quench my thirst. So I guess, Tessa, as our guest, I'll throw to you first. Who are you thirsting for this week on Deep Space Nine?
So this is probably a cheap answer, but I had forgotten how deep Sisko's voice was until I started this episode. And during the voiceover, I just, like, kind of shivered a little bit. I was like, oh, that's a nice voice there. So, yeah, I think for me, it's Sisko on the set. Even though he didn't have much of a role, it's just... That's what got me this week.
Avery Brooks has an amazing voice.
Oh, yes,
voice.
Yes.
Like, I would listen to him do a podcast. I would listen to him narrate an audiobook.
I'd listen to
Avery
him
Brooks, if you're listening.
Whisper sweet nothings into my ear. Like,
oh,
yeah, for sure.
Totally. As long as I can hang out too, so that I can also hear them, that would be great. I just invited myself. Sorry.
What's a little Avery Brooks between
Elise?
Friends?
Yes, exactly. I am thirsting.
Elise, what
over
about you? Who are you
Juliet.
Thirsting for this week?
Yes, I am thirsting after Julian this week, who's not usually my number one. Matt usually chooses Julian, but I just found him super cute when he was complaining about all the annoying ambassadors. And as Tessa mentioned earlier, he seemed a little disheveled and just, like, kind of all over the place. And
like, those ambassadors were not letting him sleep. Like, they were calling him, like, all hours of the night. No. That's what that was supposed to tell us.
Yeah, like, what a bunch of dicks. But, I just felt like I could comfort him in his complaining. And Matt, awesome. You?
And my candidate this week is Loxana, specifically in that outfit that we had mentioned before when she first goes to Odo's office and she's kind of lingering in the doorway, and it's like... Yeah, no, it's, I mean, yeah. We love a sex positive person, don't we, folks? So, yeah.
Definitely. And a sheer top, for that matter.
And I'm just going to say this. Yeah. If she had come into my office like that, would have had a very different reaction than Odo did. I'm just going to put that out there.
Mm-hmm. Same. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, where's the button to close the blinds or something?
The space blinds.
Yes.
The space blinds. There we go. Elise, what did you think was the most Star Trek thing of the episode this week?
The fact that I didn't care about the technical aspects of the episode. I didn't care about the computer problems. I was only interested in the character stuff. So basically only liking some parts of the episode and finding that one plot to be completely uninteresting.
Just to jump in on that, I would definitely say O'Brien complaining about Cardassian tech. Like, anytime an engineer complains about technology, it is like Star Trek bingo, like right there.
Oh, totally.
Totally.
Matt, do you have something different?
And like, I think on that same length, like my, I don't, forgot. Yeah, well, no, it's just I'm more of a yes and. I forgot to put it in the notes, but, like, I think I mentioned it before, too, the fact that, like, they have this, like, technological alien life form that just lives in this doghouse in the computer, like, this proverbial doghouse in the computer now that they never talk about again. That also feels very Star Trek.
Yeah, spoiler alert, I don't remember ever hearing about this ever again. We don't get any updates
this
on the
This is not an important part of the DS9 overarching plot.
No, it's like, and it's equivalent because, like, I've been working my way through Mass Effect as well with the Legendary Edition. It's like imagine adding, like, Edie to the Normandy and then just never talking about Edie again,
like never talking about Edie, like, again.
Anyways, but yeah, exactly.
I'll pretend you that have, I know, like, what a big you're talking sequence about.
So
I'm just teasing.
All right, well, I mean, you'll get there eventually, maybe.
No.
Mass Effect 2. In fact, that's probably...
Does anyone else
It's so hot in here, but I have a basement. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry, no one needs to know my plans.
Are you looking forward to...
Do...
Matt's just going to be naked in his basement for the rest of the day.
Hey, you know, that is a completely acceptable way to deal with the heat.
I agree.
Totally. And I gotta get that Reaper IFF. I gotta recruit Legion. It'll be good, because then I've done everything else before that, so I'm ready, and then I'll just go into the suicide mission and then do the two DLCs after.
See,
anyways, this isn't a Mass Effect
three.
Podcast. This is a Star Trek podcast. Okay. Yeah, I've been slowly working my way through. I haven't had a lot of time to play lately, but no, it's good. Well, Tessa, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a lot of
fun. Yeah, this was awesome.
Thank you for having me on. This
Please
was
come
fun.
Back.
I love talking Trek with anyone, even people who don't want to talk about Trek. So,
oh, that sounds like me. or my dad.
My
about
poor parents thing. Growing
Not
up.
Not sorry, Dad. please come back anytime. We would love to have you.
I will take you up on that.
Do you want to tell the listeners where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Swayla Tessa. Swayla is spelled S-W-E-H-L-A. You can also find me on my other podcast, Monkey Off My Backlog, a pop culture productivity podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Monkey Backlog or anywhere that you get your podcasts.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Elise_Tendi, ELYSE_TENDI.
And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd as well at Mattyhugh, MattyHugh. You can also catch me on my other podcast talking about Mad Men on Still Great Bob with their Twitter and Instagram, Still Great Pod.
If you want to find the show on social media, we are on Twitter and Instagram at podwraiths, PODWRAITHS, and you can also email us at podwraiths@gmail.com.
And as always, please rate and review us on the podcasting system of your choice, and if you do so, we will more than likely read your review at the start of the podcast. Thank you again to DJ Empirical for our very groovy and interstellar theme song. And until next week, computer, end program.
Bye.
That's a great ending. I love that.